Thank you, Brother Gary. That was an encouragement to me, and I trust it was to you as well. Just that thought. I have been so blessed. And listen, if you're saved, that's the greatest blessing of all. And plus, God has done so much more. And I appreciate it, by the way, Valerie, that impromptu. And by the way, that truly was impromptu. We hadn't arranged that, announced that. And I know she can do it. And so I've, of course, seen her do it many, many times over the years. And we're just thankful for you as well and our church family. And trust that you are doing well here during these times. The end is in sight. And we certainly are thankful because we have been so blessed. If you have your Bibles, please turn to Matthew chapter number 25. Now, you're going to have to follow along. I'm going to sort of take you on a route that will end up at a destination here. By the end of the message, I've got a real application that I want to give to us here. But tonight, I want to talk to you about rewarding faithfulness, and especially the passage that we're going to be preaching from here in Matthew chapter 25. I know it's been preached many times, the parable of the talents. And yet, I think that there's something in this that we oftentimes miss, and I'm going to try and explain, even from a teaching standpoint here, why I believe this and what we need to learn and take away here tonight. But rewarding faithfulness. Notice in Matthew chapter 25, and beginning in verse number 14, the Bible says, "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1. To every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same, and made them other 5 talents. And likewise he that had received 2, he also gained other 2. But he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents, and behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His Lord said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. Missionary in Africa told a story one time about a lady in his church. A lady who had been reached with the gospel, but a lady who was handicapped, and she couldn't read or write because she was blind. But yet she asked the missionary one day and said, Missionary, listen, could you get me a Bible? And he thought, well, why would you want a Bible? And she wanted it in French. This was a French-speaking country. And so she said, one more thing. She said, could you go to John 3:16 and could you maybe underline that verse in red? Again, this is a blind lady. And so the missionary, he obliged, and she said, oh, one more thing. Can you mark the page so that somehow I can figure out how to get to John 3:16? So the missionary did so, and he gave the lady the French Bible marked in John 3:16, underlined in red marks so that she could find it. But he's real curious. Again, you know, what is she going to do with this, a blind lady with a Bible and just simply marked up? What's she going to do? Well, he ended up following her, and she went to a school that was made up of all boys, and she waited outside of this school until it was time to dismiss. And as soon as they were dismissing out of the school, she would stop one of the boys, and she would ask the boy, and she would say, listen, can you read French? And if she found a boy that said yes, she said, well, then could you read this? And so she would point then to a verse she couldn't see, but she would point to John 3:16, and so the boy would read it to her, of course, in French, and then she would ask the question, do you know what that means? Well, naturally, if a boy said no, she said, well, then let me tell you. And over the years, this blind lady not only led scores and scores of boys to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ, but she also, out of that group of boys that she led to Christ, ended up with 24 of them that became preachers of the gospel. Now, I would say to you, that is faithfulness. You know, tonight I want to speak to you on that subject about rewarding faithfulness. And that we've got a story, it's a parable, a story that Jesus tells that teaches us something, but specifically about what we are to be faithful most with. And so tonight I want to have you listen to the message entitled Rewarding Faithfulness. Father, I pray that you'd use me as I try and preach, as I try and encourage, and Lord, as I try and bring home especially one point, as I looked at this story and eventually as I realized here what we most need to be faithful with, Lord, I pray that you bless our people, and Lord, may tonight be a great night to learn and Lord, to apply. I pray that you bless our service now as we finish it up here with this sermon. We pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, in the 1840s, another example of faithfulness would have been John and Charlotte Getty, who John left a very successful pastorate in Nova Scotia, and he and his wife and their two young children traveled some 7,000 miles to the South Seas to a little island at the time called New Hebrides, a little island chain and several islands that was filled with cannibals. In fact, just a month before the Gettys arrived, there was actually a story about a group of sailors that were on a British ship, and they had actually been attacked and eaten by the savages. And so, a very dangerous thing. And yet, John and his wife came to that island, and they landed. And, of course, the work was slow. The work was slow because they had to learn a language. They had to work on translating. They had to work. And over the years, they just plodded along. In fact, over the next 20 years, they plodded along and were able to see a bunch of folks saved, started 25 churches, but then because of poor health, John had to retire from the field. There's a little plaque in the pulpit of the church in Canada that John left to go to the mission field, a plaque that honors the Gettys. And on that plaque, it is said about John Getty and his wife that when he landed in 1848, there were no Christians there. And when he left in 1872, there were no heathen. You see, John Getty is an example of faithfulness. I'll give you another example would be, of course, the famous missionary C.T. Studd. He was a missionary that literally had been reached through the revival meetings of D.L. Moody when he came to England. And C.T. Studd was a wealthy man, a very successful, athletic, very popular in England, and yet he gave up his inheritance. And for over four decades, he served the Lord as a missionary in three places, in China, and then India, and then across Africa. And he finally died, but before he died, he wrote a poem, which is where we get the very famous line from this poem that he wrote. Because C.T. Studd said, "Only one life, 'twill soon be past, and only what's done for Christ will last." You know, in Matthew chapter 25, we've got this story, a parable of Christ, and it's briefly about a man, a wealthy man, who has quite a bit of means, but he's got these three servants. And he takes his means, his wealth, and he distributes to these three servants, and he distributes it differently. To one, he gives five talents, to another, two, to another, one. And he goes away, but he expects them to replenish and multiply and invest what they've been given. And so finally the accounting time comes as he returns and he begins to bring them in one by one. He starts with the man, the servant that had the five talents. And he said, "Well, tell me, how's business been?" And the servant is glad to tell him, "Listen, it's been pretty good. I invested and I made five talents more." Boy, that master, that businessman is overjoyed. And of course he properly congratulates him. "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." We read it in the story. And likewise, he brings in the servant with the two talents. And though he wasn't given as much to begin with, he did the very same thing. He doubled the investment. And now he's got not just two, but four talents. And by the way, this master's overjoyed. His first two servants have doubled his wealth thus far, starting with five and two, seven. Now he's got 14 talents. He can hardly wait to find out what the next servant will say. And so he brings in the final servant, the one with the one talent. He says, "Well, how did business go?" And the servant said, "Oh, listen, I knew that you didn't want to lose anything. I knew that you're an austere, you're a businessman. And so I went and I hid the talent in the earth." He didn't do anything. He just simply, out of fear, out of just simply didn't want to take a chance, he went and just simply hid that talent in the earth. And the master is upset. He even calls him a wicked and slothful servant. He even orders him to be cast out into outer darkness. By the way, I don't believe that meant or is to illustrate that he was sent to hell. I don't believe that at all. But I believe that he now was fired. You might even say that. Sort of like a firing and very pronounced, as the master says, cast him out. And so he's outside of the job, outside of the business, and he's outside deservedly let go. Now, what is this all about? And I want you to just be patient as I kind of go through and even give you some teaching sidelines, some things that will help us to understand exactly what I believe the purpose of this parable is all about. But let's, first of all, let's come to understand these talents. Because there's a term in here, and we've got these three servants, and one is given five talents, and one is given two talents, and one is given one. Now, listen, it's going to make no sense to us unless we explain, unless we translate. And I'll give you, by the way, a couple of examples why that is true. So many different cases, so many different ways that we could illustrate this, but let me begin by even making a side parallel statement, and that is something you're familiar with, a mile. Do you know what a mile is? You say, well, yes. How long is a mile? How many feet are in a mile? If you answered in your head 5,280 feet, you're correct. Now, but here's the question. Who came up with 5,280? Actually, it's really kind of a quiz. It's interesting that actually the word mile, it goes back to the days of the Romans. And in the days of the Roman army would step out and they would count. And every 1,000 paces, the word mile comes from the Latin word mil. It's a word which means 1,000. And so as the Roman soldiers would pace 1,000 steps, each step was basically 5 feet. And so they would step out every 1,000 paces would equal a mile. But you say, wait a second, Pastor Clear, five feet times 1,000, that equals five. Where did the extra 280 feet come? It's actually in the translation. You see, that's what, and it's true, in the ancient Roman miles, it was 5,000 feet. Every 5,000 feet, if you go to Rome and you look at the mile markers there in ancient Rome, you'll find they're 5,000 feet. But when we took that same word, mile, and when it began to be translated, especially into English, at the time, the English didn't have anything resembling a mile. In fact, the only thing that they had as far as a long measurement was something called a furlong. And a furlong is the longest measurement the farmers had for their fields. And a furlong was equal to 660 feet. And so what they did was just simply calculate and came the closest they could. And so they figured, well, a mile might be approximately 8 of these furlongs. If you multiply 8 times 660, you get 5,280 feet. Hence, the extra 280 feet are because of the translation into English. And that's why now all miles are marked out as 5,280 feet. But in ancient Rome, they were 5,000. I'll give you another example. Again, if you didn't know this, you wouldn't understand what it is. For instance, how about baseball? I wish, by the way, we had baseball going right now. It's beautiful. You know, of course, it's raining today, but it's going to be beautiful later this week. It'd be a great day to be having a baseball game. But did you know what is the distance between home plate and the pitcher's mound? The distance between home plate and the pitcher's mound. Now, if you answered in your head, 60 feet and 6 inches, you would be correct. Did you know, by the way, that actually the distance was changed in 1893? And baseball executives figured, you know, we got to back up the pitcher. And so they backed it up, but their instructions were to back it up to 60 feet. That made sense. Another 10 feet back. So how come it's 60 feet and 6 inches? Well, the guy that they assigned to mark the fields, and they had several baseball teams back in the late 1800s, and so the guy that was assigned to mark all of the baseball fields, he misread the instructions, and guess what he read? He didn't read 60 feet, but somehow he read it 60 feet and 6 inches. And so since he marked all of the fields that way, the baseball executive said, you know, it's not worth changing, fixing. They left it as is, and even to this day, all of the baseball pitcher's mounds are 60 feet and 6 inches back. Now, you say, well, Pass Clear, what does that have to do with our story? Well, you know, the same thing is true, by the way. When we throw out sometimes numbers, it makes a difference. You'd better understand what the number represents. For instance, I would even mention to ladies, I happen to be married to Valerie, and it's very important that you understand when you are talking about a size, if the subject is about dress size or shoe size, there's a difference between those two. And if you throw out the wrong thing, you're going to have the wrong context and the wrong understanding. And the same is true when it comes to Bible numbers and Bible measurements like talents. So exactly what is a biblical talent? Well, a talent was a Roman coin, and it was a Roman coin. And if you know, there's a couple of coins that we're familiar with. For instance, one in the Bible is called a penny. Now, the Roman denarii, as it was, the penny, as it's termed in English, was worth the equivalent of a day's wage. But a talent was made of gold. It was much more valuable. A talent was worth 6,000 pennies. Now, just simply to give you a kind of a rule, if you were to translate that here today, last year, I looked this up, the average wage of an American that was working was $48,000. That was the average salary, average earning. Somebody was making $48,000. Last year, that's the average. Now, if you were to take 20 times 48,000, you would come to nearly $1 million. So I think in approximation, you might even say that when we are talking about a man that's got these talents, 5, 2, and 1, 8 talents, that's the equivalent of $8 million. Every one of these coins is in value, in today's value, it's going to be valued maybe at $1 million. Now, that's a pretty valuable thing. And that helps us even to understand a little bit more about this story. But secondly, let's understand the context. Because what is the context of this story? And I'm going to try and make some statements, but especially I'm trying to kind of narrow you into an understanding so you know exactly what the purpose and what the real punchline of the story is. But the context is Jesus is preaching to his disciples. Matthew 25 and Matthew 24 go together. And really it begins in Matthew 24 when Jesus is answering a question that the disciples bring to him. And the question is really twofold. They ask, when he mentions about one stone not being left on another, he says, the disciples said, tell us, when shall these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming? That's found in Matthew chapter 24, verse number 3. This is all, by the way, part of what we call the Olivet Discourse, the Sermon on the Mount of Olives. It's the premier sermon at the end, as Jesus had a premier sermon in the beginning, the Sermon on the Mount. Now he's got this Olivet Discourse. But it's all about the coming of Christ, the second coming. And it's all about when he comes. And by the way, this is not the rapture, but this is at the end of the tribulation. That's why when you get to Matthew 24, you're going to be reading all sorts of signs, but not signs for the rapture, signs for the second coming. And therefore, it's about when Jesus is then going to set up his kingdom. And you see that, by the way, the second coming is mentioned. For instance, in Matthew 24, verse 27, for as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Verse number 36, just a few verses later, this is actually what the meaning of this particular verse is, but of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. We are wrong when we are applying that to the rapture. It's not about the rapture, it's about the second coming. It's about the end of the tribulation. It's about when Christ, his feet are planted on the Mount of Olives. No man knows the day nor the hour of his return to the earth. Now, that's the second coming. And you even see that, but you even find that within here, you've got all sorts of statements about the kingdom that Christ is going to set up. And what Jesus does is Christ explains by illustrating with three different stories. We call them parables. And each one of these parables, he makes a point about it being like unto the kingdom. It's to illustrate his coming kingdom. And there's a lesson. For instance, the first one is the parable of the 10 virgins. There are 5 that are wise and 5 that are foolish. Notice how he begins that parable about being ready. He says in Matthew 25 and verse number 1, "Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins." After he's through with that parable, then he goes to this parable that we're talking about here tonight, the parable of the talents. Notice, likewise, he brings in the kingdom here in verse number 14. Notice, "For the kingdom of heaven is as." And then thirdly, he has a final illustration, and that is the judgment of the nations. It's the setting of a king and a kingdom. In verse number 31 of chapter 25, "When the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of glory." And that's where he's going to separate what he calls the sheep from the ghost. Now, the point is this, that this is all actually a timed thing. It's all specific about the second coming of Christ. It's all about when he sets up his kingdom. And it all makes sense because it's answering the questions that the disciples have asked. When shall these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming? But now, third, I want to also teach you something. We need to understand a rule of teaching that applies here. It's a Bible rule. We don't oftentimes talk about it, but let's understand the rule of teaching in progression. Because it's a teaching tool. It's a teaching tool that's regarded in Jewish teaching. By the way, you'll note that the number 3 is very important to them. That's the God print, the number of God. And so anytime that you see 3 of anything, it's significant, but especially when there are 3 successive stories. And the rule of progression is this, because the Jews would literally understand this, and that is that you always want to especially look to the third story, the third parable. That's when the climax, that's when the punchline came, that's when the real moral came, that's when the real application came. And so if you're going to understand the first two, you better understand the third. Now, by the way, another place where this is very obvious is if you go to the book of Luke, you'll notice in Luke that Jesus has 3 successive stories to talk about, lost and found. It's in Luke chapter 15. And by the way, it's very specific. It's in progression. You've got lost things. And the numbers, basically, they whittle down. He first of all starts out by talking about sheep, lost sheep. And he mentions 1 out of 100 being lost. He goes after the lost sheep. He then finishes that parable, and then he goes and talks about lost coins. And he talks about a woman in her house who has 1 lost coin out of 10. So we go from 1 out of 100 to now narrowing it to 1 out of 10. But then we have that third parable, the parable that we oftentimes call the parable of the prodigal son. It's a story about a father who has 2 sons, and one of them especially is known as a lost son. And so it's about that son. But in the story, it's not just simply about the one son that was lost but is found, but it's about that elder brother. The elder brother that really illustrates the bad attitude of the Pharisees and the religious leaders who really were not excited about a lost person being saved. And so Jesus teaches that whole story about their pride and about their self-centeredness and about even as illustrated by even the elder brother who throws a temper tantrum and will not come in and party, and yet the father comes out to the son and says, "Listen, isn't it meet that we would do this? Because after all, your brother was lost and he's found. He was dead, he's now alive. And so we want to make merry. We want to rejoice about this." Now, the same thing is true when you have the punchline being in the third story. You have the same thing being true here. Because really, if you want to understand the parable of the talents, you'd better understand the third teaching, which is that judgment of the nations. And really, I'll tell you what it's really all about. And really, this is what the talents represent for us. It's all about people. It's about people. People that God has given you and given you an opportunity to invest in and to make something out of them and make more out of them. It's people. Notice By the way, in the judgment of the nations, this is Matthew chapter 25, it's all about people. It's about these judgments. And by the way, I happen to think this is properly in context here, probably about those during the tribulation. The judgment of the nations specifically comes after the tribulation and probably is in response to those who are still alive that are on this earth. They are gathered together. And in a sense here, Jesus Christ divides them up in two different camps, two different categories, some that treated the Jews well. You know, there's always been a lot of anti-Semitism. There's always been a lot of anti-Israel. Even to this day, there are those who hate the Jews. They are literally surrounded by nations that hate them. And even sometimes, even in our country, there are those who are anti-Semitic. But during the tribulation, it will be at its height. No matter how bad it's been up until now, it will be the worst during those 7 years. And so at the end of the tribulation, when Jesus actually comes to this earth, he'll immediately judge the nations that are on this earth that are still alive. And so he'll gather them together and he'll say, listen, you go over here on the right, you go over on the left. You are like sheep, you are like goats. And what is the judgment all about? And he'll say to them, the judgment is basically this. You know, when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was thirsty, you gave me drink. And when I was naked, you clothed me. When I was in prison, you visited me. And you did all of these things. And they will say, well, when did we do these things? And Jesus said, when you did it unto one of these, the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Now, so what are my talents? What are my talents? And again, I took a lot of time to just simply get to this point. But if you follow this teaching, you'll understand that really all of these are about that the greatest thing that you and I have to invest in is not the building of the church. It's not the brick. It's not the pews. We are thankful for the building that we have. But just like we said here in recent weeks, it's not just simply the church and the steeple and we open the doors and here's what it is. It's the people. It's the people. It's the people. And what God is teaching us, what Christ is teaching us in this parable, when it relates to talents, listen, that is not so much about money. That's not about gifts and different, you know, curious things that maybe you're better than somebody else in playing, you know, your instruments or maybe singing a song or preaching a message. But it's all about what are we doing with people. Listen, I mentioned last Sunday morning to all of the moms and dads that, listen, let's make a goal and let's try and raise some eagles. Listen, it's about raising those kids. And by the way, church, can I mention, you know, that we have been under this stay-at-home order, which, by the way, is down to just a couple of hours. Hoo-hoo. We're going to get out of the stay-at-home. You've already been out of it. I can already tell some of you. I've seen you out there and you've been out and about and you didn't stay home. But listen, we're going to be done with that. But you know, that stay-at-home order did not order us to stop investing in people. Did you know you can invest in people by writing notes and cards and texting, and you can invest in people? How about your neighbors? You know, during this time, how much time have you invested to witnessing to your neighbors, to talking to your neighbors, to getting to know your neighbors, to find a neighbor in need and maybe meeting a need? When was the last time that you thought about one of our shut-ins and maybe you wrote to one of our shut-ins? And when was the last time that you maybe thought about our missionaries and maybe even contacted them and said, listen, brother, I'm praying for you? When was the last time? Listen, what we are going to be judged the most on is what we have done with people. What have we done with our own family? What have we done in our marriage? What have we done to our church members? You know, as I think about this, I can't help but think about Pastor Johnson. And boy, preacher, I miss him. And, you know, for 35 years, he was the pastor here. And he was my pastor. And I know there are many of you that, like me, can say that he invested heavily in you. I believe he's still clipping coupons today. Why? Because I'll tell you what was important to Pastor Johnson. It was not the things. It was not the money. It wasn't the building. It wasn't the cars and the parking lot. It was the people in the cars and the people in the building. And that's why, I mean, everywhere that you saw Pastor Johnson, he just couldn't help. He just wanted to be around people and invest in people. You know, I've told this story before about when I was a college student and I was a senior in college and going to be graduating from Pillsbury Baptist Bible College that year, and I just knew that I didn't understand a lot of things about ministry, though my classes were helpful and good, and I was going to be graduating within the year. I just simply felt like there was more for me to gain. And I'll never forget contacting Pastor Johnson, and I asked him, I said, "Preacher," and by this time I'd only been in the church a couple of years. I'd done a summer internship. I had been in the choir, involved in the ministry, but I ventured out and I said, "Preacher," I said, "I've got so many questions and some things I want to learn. I feel like I need to have an appointment. I want to ask you some questions." And I asked him, I said, "Would you be willing to give me a weekly appointment?" And Pastor Johnson just jumped at the chance. He said, I'll have a Friday appointment with you every Friday. And every Friday as I'd get done with my classes at Pillsbury, I'd drive up the 60 miles and I'd drive into the parking lot here and I'd go into Pastor Johnson's office. And by the way, it was only supposed to be scheduled for an hour, but you never had only an hour meeting with preacher. And that 1 to 2 or sometimes even 3 hours, is he would just simply pour his heart out, is an example of what Jesus was teaching. Listen, you're going to be judged on the basis of what you have done with people. Let me just say quickly 4 things, and we'll be almost through, but notice, number one, we are given opportunities to invest in people. Think about that. Now, by the way, that doesn't mean that we take advantage of that, because number two, we are going to be accountable to the king for what we do. That's what this parable is teaching. You will be accountable. The master represents Christ. And when Christ returns, listen, it's going to matter, what did you do with people? And again, though we are appreciative for people that invest money, we certainly need that. But what we really need is we need to witness, we need to invest in people, we need to encourage, we need to lift up. That's one of the reasons, by the way, why it's time we need to get back to having church together. Because it's awfully hard to do this when we are disassembled. We need to assemble. Number three, the king wants to reward us. You know, in this story, it's evident that the king got all sorts of pleasure out of rewarding faithful servants. And number four, he will reward us if we invest in people. I was talking to one of our missionaries recently, Brother Steve Messersmith. And again, you think, by the way, it's been tight here during these weeks. In England, during their stay-at-home order, they were not allowed to have more than 2 people that they assembled with, 2. And Brother Messersmith said, you know, our kids, you know, were at home, and, you know, we basically said we'd go out to the garage, and, you know, they exercise, and so we'd have some weights out there, and it just was garage or house, but we stayed within our small little enclosure there, and Cosmer Close, I know it well, and they were extremely limited, and Brother Messersmith said that even when it became necessary to live stream, you know, his services, he'd have to go over and have his son Stephen maybe come over and just simply 2 of them, because that's all they could have. So I said, we've been very, very lonely. But, you know, Brother Messersmith, you know, was faithful in doing that. And recently he told me about how that he was contacted by a young man in his 20s. I believe the young man's name is Anthony. And this man, Anthony, contacted him and said, "Listen, I recently got saved, but I don't know much about the Bible. Could you teach me the Bible?" Boy, Brother Messersmith, he went online, and they've done it from a distance. They've arranged several other times to get together, and as soon as they're able to open up, this man wants to come, wants to get baptized, wants to be part of the church, wants to be trained, disciple. Now, listen, that's what I'm talking about. It's all about taking advantage. Have you listened, by the way, to all of the missionary prayer letters and how our missionaries have been doing what? They've been trying to still invest in people. Folks, let's you and I do the same. This week, I want you to find a person to invest in. I want you to find a person you can pray for specifically. I want you to find an individual that you can encourage. I want you to find an individual that you can lift up. Why? Because the parable of the talents teaches us that God, that Jesus Christ, wants to reward faithfulness. Let's bow our heads, and before we finish, you know, just hear the words of the master in that verse, "Well done. Well done, thou good and faithful servant," as Valerie comes and will begin playing the piano. Think about that. Think about if you were to receive those words for Christ. Listen, I can't think of anything greater than to hear those words, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. Have you been faithful? Have you been faithful with people? Let's start with your family. Let's start with your home. Have you been faithful, mom and dad, with your children? You know, one of the blessings, by the way, we can say about this crisis is it has given us opportunity to spend time with the family. Have you taken advantage of it? Have you invested? Have you taught? Have you trained? Have you encouraged? How about your neighbors? Have you invested in your neighbors? Your neighbors, do they know Christ? Your neighbors, do they have a heartache, a burden? Maybe you could encourage them this week. How about your church family? How about those that are part of our church? Listen, they need to be ministered. You can pray. You can encourage. You can lift up. That's what I think the church is all about. And there's so many other opportunities. Think about it, work. Jesus Christ wants us to be faithful, investing in people. He might give 1-5, 1-2, 1-1. He's teaching there. Use what you have, the opportunities, and make the most and invest in people. That's what he wants to reward. He wants to reward faithfulness with people. Thank you. You may look up this way again. Thank you for tuning in here tonight. Don't forget, Wednesday we'll be back. And again, we're going to continue the live streaming for all services, even when we do reopen. But Wednesday night, we're going to be back in our study of the life of Christ, the story of the nobleman's son. And